You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
There was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DMs always open for you. And subscribe so you get this podcast once it goes live. We will catch up with Mike Helfgott, the coach, on the NFL draft. A very short conversation and an update from Mike. We'll also talk to Devin Caney, who covers Philly sports and works for the Superbook. Now, Devin and I had this conversation about a week ago. I bring it to you today. Some of the stuff is outdated, but not a lot of it. It's a real conversation about how she got into this space, her plunge into it, the importance of going with your gut, and a wager on Nick Foles that I will never, ever forget. We got five. Count them, five. Five bets on the draft, and these are all bets that have gone in over the last 7 days or so. Derek Stingley Jr., under 11.5, minus 150. Feel great about that. His prop now is 7.5, 8.5, depending on where you shop. And there are rumors that Stingley could crawl into the top three or top four of the draft. I'm guessing that's probably a winner. We shall see. Trevor Penning, under 16.5, minus 135. That juice has risen minus 180, minus 190. I still think Penning could go 12, 14, or 16. We shall see. N'Kobe Dean, over 30.5, minus 125. I'll touch on that one in just a second. Jordan Davis, under 14.5, minus 125. Superbook on Wednesday morning had under 14.5, minus 280. So again, get the right bet in at the right price. And the last one, I don't think this one wins. Market has moved a dollar, but Kenny Pickett, drafted by Carolina at plus 250. That market now plus 150, plus 160. But with the quarterbacks both sliding, Pickett and Willis, it's impossible to know where they go. It is what it is. That's my five, and that's probably going to be it as we roll through a Wednesday night and into a Thursday day of the draft. For more in-depth NFL draft conversation, I would implore you to check out Twitter Spaces from last night. Will Brinson joined us from CBS Sports, Nick Costos from You Better You Bet, and Andy Molitor from Bet Spurts and the Deep Dive Pod. So much going on last night. Information, education, entertainment, and actionable stuff, too. We opened up. Brinson said there's about a 90% chance that Trayvon Walker goes number one overall. At which point I stopped him almost midpoint and went, wait a minute. Trayvon Walker's minus 160, minus 170 to go number one. And Will is explaining all of his credible sources and the people he talks to and the draft experts saying, he's going number one. So at that point, I took a bet out. Other people in this spaces are betting on Trayvon Walker to go number one overall. I know we missed the move. I know Walker was available at much bigger prices, but that's the story of the NFL draft. The information is more important than a perceived bad price because that price will usually get even worse. The Kyle Pitts example last year. I remember Pitts' draft position was 5.5, minus 125, minus 130, under. And I loved minus a quarter, minus 130. A couple days later, minus 150, then it's 180, then it's 300, then it's 500, then it's 8,000, then it's off the board. These prices continue to run. So we're all explaining how you can bet Walker. Not only straight, minus 160, but you could do the combo bets. The Walker and the Hutchinson. The Walker and the Kayvon Thibodeau, the Walker and the whoever, the 1-2-3 combo, Walker, Hutchinson, Derek Stingley, whatever. If you can key in the one, you can build off that. So that was a great start. That led into a conversation about the Jacksonville draft room, how Aiden Hutchinson over 1.5 draft position is a mortal lock. Derek Stingley's potential to go third overall. Brinson has a bet on him at like, I want to say it's 10-1 on Stingley to go third overall. And now he's a favorite to go third overall. Which old lineman goes first? So on and so on and so on. Costo shared his favorite bets what he's hearing about the Jets and Giants at their headquarters. Molitor discussing his draft betting strategy, building a portfolio. It was great stuff all around. And I know for a fact people were firing bets. I was getting DMs from people that were listening to the spaces saying, yo, I just bet this, this, and this with bet slips and tickets. People were firing. And that was a unique situation because the draft tends to be a market that is extremely volatile. Things move fast. Information drives the money, which drives the market. Walker was minus 160, minus 170 when that spaces started. Wednesday morning, Walker was as high as minus 240 to go first overall. We talked about Jordan Davis at the end. That was Will's favorite bet. Under 14.5, minus 125 in the middle of that spaces. By midnight, the 125 morphed into a minus 165. And now Superbook, as I said, minus 280. We also discussed one of my buddies trying to bet $300 on a prop at 4-1 and getting limited to like $4.32. Lots of great conversations in that spaces. That's probably a better chance for you to get info on the draft. If you're listening to this podcast for draft information, this isn't the podcast. Go back and listen to the spaces. Go to my page at SP Shoot, and you can play back the spaces from Tuesday night. But really, as a bookmaker, booking the draft is lose-lose. Derek Stevens said it best. Owner of Circa, Golden Gate, the D. Best result, we lose. Worst result, we get crushed. Back to N'Kobe Dean, over 30.5, which is starting to rise at most American sports books. And I wrote about this Wednesday morning on NESN. And the title of the story is Bet Over Georgia Linebacker N'Kobe Dean's Position. And it's a very solid example of how the information tends to shift these draft prices. And that's why it's tough to write a column or do a podcast about draft information and draft stuff, because by the time you hit submit on the column or by the time the podcast gets edited hours later and posted, these prices move. I mean, you see players' prices move 30 cents in 10 minutes. So that was why we did the spaces. But Dean is a player whose stock is starting to slide. I saw a side-by-side photo of the two Georgia linebackers, N'Kobe Dean and Quay Walker. Quay Walker looks like he's a 25-year-old grown man, and N'Kobe Dean looks like an 18-year-old senior in high school. It's a hilarious photo. That's one of the reasons why Dean is sliding. It's his size, his frame, some of his athletic stuff, and then there are some medical issues I've been told as well, some growing concerns about some of the medicals. But on Wednesday morning, that stuff still wasn't really all that public yet, the medical stuff. There have been people for 2 days telling me, hey, Dean's going second round. So I pulled the five sports books that had Dean's position and laid them all out on NESN.com. DraftKings, 30.5, over 130. BetMGM, 30.5, over minus 170. PointsBet, 30.5, over minus 200. Already, three books, same number, but three different prices. FanDuel, 31.5, over minus 130. Circa, 32.5, over minus 130. Money is moving against him. And why would you bet over 32.5 at Circa when you could bet over 30.5 at DraftKings for the same price? It's a $130 wager to win 100 at both shops, but you get the two slots of cushion at DraftKings. The closer we get to the morning of the draft, I have a feeling this price is going to rise. Minus 160, minus 170 at DraftKings. Those 30.5s become 31.5s. So you have to strike before the curve reconfigures to maximize your money and minimize your risk. So even on Wednesday morning, I thought Dean was a very good bet over 30.5. By Wednesday night, Thursday morning, though, it may not be a great bet. And that's why the draft stuff is instantaneous. When there was a pick I liked, boom, tweet it so you can read it at Chicken X Dinner. Very important to get these bets when they come out. Not just my bets, Will's bets, Nick's bets, Molitor's bets. Whoever you know that is plugged into these draft markets, you want to bet when you get the information. And I promise you, I'm going to get multiple texts an hour before the draft from somebody that didn't get any bets over the last 2 weeks, didn't place anything, starts to see the montages in Vegas and the players in suits. They're going to text me and go, what's the best bet in the draft? You like Stingley under 5.5? Like, no. These markets have been fluid since the beginning of March. And the more you understand that, the more you're going to make when it comes to the draft. You can't make money at a lot of books, though. And I don't know if you saw the story on VSiN about James Salinas going into Barstool in Colorado and then the fallout from that with the VP of VIP thinking limiting players is funny. It's been a wild week on Twitter. I mean, my Twitter is always, you know, featuring me going lock horns with somebody. But this all started on VSiN. They tweeted the video out of Brady Cannon, a buddy of mine, interviewing professional bettor James Salinas about trying to bet the draft in Colorado, which is a very, very large market. Several outs, limits are pretty good. They take action, and there are a lot of places to get down. Salinas went up the hill in a Blackhawk and popped into the Ameristar, which is a Barstool shop. It's an Ameristar casino, but they outsource the book to Barstool. Salinas walks up to the counter, asks about the limits. The guy at the counter, as James said, big barrel-chested guy, we'll take whatever you want. Salinas said, all right, here's what I want. I have two bets I want. Three dimes on Kayvon Thibodeau to go top five at plus 100. So that's 3,000 to win 3,000. And a dime on Thibodeau to go number two overall at plus 350. 1,000 to win 3,500. So Salinas wants to get down $4,000 to win a collective amount of 6,500. Not a lot of money if you're booking bets. And they printed the tickets, which qualifies as a legal transaction. Barstool employee goes to the back, runs an ID check, talks to the supervisor, who probably runs it up the flagpole, and they come back out. Same guy says, all right, well, we need to limit these bets. The 3,000 you wanted on Thibodeau to go top five, we're going to cut that to 800. The $1,000 bet on Thibodeau to go number two, we're going to cut that to a nickel, 500. 3,000 to 800, 1,000 to 500. But wait, it gets worse. They change the lines on him. They used his fucking bets as information to shape their market, but didn't give him the transaction that was printed. They changed the lines on him. The bet at plus 100, they changed to minus 129. The bet at plus 350, they changed to plus 250. Salinas is like, give me my money back. I'm out of here. I think it was wonderfully put by Captain Jack Andrews at CapJack2000. He summarized the instance this way. A wager has three parts. A price offered, a stake offered, the stake accepted. And in Salinas' case, the wager was accepted and the ticket was printed. Then they changed their mind. Bad. Bad look. So this gets out on social. VSiN blasts it out. It gets retweeted and recycled. And there's hundreds and thousands of views on this. So Sabrina Pinto, who is the vice president of VIP engagement at Barstool, decided she was going to join the party on Sunday. And was she tweeting out of her depth? Holy shit. She responded to the tweet, and it wasn't a great response. So then people are responding to her response, and somebody took her Twitter header, which is a picture of a casino, the high limit room, and it's literally a picture of the two words, high limit. Somebody photoshopped that image to where it said highly limited, which is funny. Tweeted it at Sabrina Pinto. She responded to that and said, this is actually really funny, laughing emoji. And I'm like, wait a minute. Did the VP of VIP engagement just basically admit that limiting players is really funny? What's going on here? She responded to me saying, yup. Actually, let me read this. She responded to me, and here's the quote. Yup, that makes a ton on sense. I repeat, yup, that makes a ton on sense. I know math is hard, dot, dot, dot. What? I'm not even talking about math. I'm asking, why are you laughing at somebody who's making fun of Barstool for limiting players? I didn't bring up she clearly didn't know what she was talking about. So Sabrina is going back and forth with people that are going at Barstool. Sabrina spent the rest of the day backtracking, then eventually started deleting all of her tweets and then blocking people. Wild. We also saw Drake, rapper Drake, join the parlay party this week. I believe it was either Monday or Tuesday night. My days are all running together, all the TV rehearsals we're doing over here at Nesson. But multiple accounts tweeted out Drake's three-game parlay. He wagered almost $500,000, $400,000, that was his parlay, on three different outcomes. Nets money line, Mavericks money line, Blue Jays money line. This was Monday night, now that I think of it. It was $400,000 and change to pay out $2.2 million. Naturally, the first leg lost, Nets got swept. Why is this news? It's amazing that Drake can get down a $400,000 parlay to win $2.2 million, but a professional bettor in Colorado can't get down, $4,000 to win $6,500. You try and level that shit for me. I'm waiting for somebody to explain that to me, how that can happen. When's the Lady Gaga parlay? The poker face boost? Or the baby I was born this way parlay? If Lady Gaga walks into Barstool, Colorado, how much can she get down? But somebody who knows what they're doing can't get down shit. And this is what nobody talks about. And it's not just at XYZ. It happens all over the place. What I thought about, though, when I saw Drake's parlay, is that I need a handicapping contest between Drake and Dan Le Batard like I need air to breathe. Can you imagine how much money we'd make on that? Forget the bartender. If we could just get picks from those two every weekend in the NFL or college football, or get those two team, three-team parlays. Can't really fade a parlay, I know, but I would love a handicapping contest between people that pump gambling content that don't win. That would be, we could probably all retire on that. Last thing before we get to our guests. I apologize for the delay in some of this stuff. You know, I taped this with Mike Helfgott on Tuesday around noon Eastern time. I'm bringing it to you now on a Wednesday. The bet he brought up at the end is still actionable at the price. But as you know, if you follow Chicken Dinner and listen to Chicken Dinner, every draft bet that I've made comes from Mike. He's the best, I believe, in the business at betting the NFL draft. So we sort of summed up his experience betting the draft. I bring that to you, followed by a conversation with Devin Caney from the Superbook and a great host reporter out in Philly about a lot of her entry into the space. We talk a little Sixers-Raptors, a little outdated, Jokic against Embiid, her first bet ever, her thoughts on the Eagles' win total, and also going with your gut. I bring these to you a little late. Please understand, there's a lot going on here. Draft week is super busy. We've been swamped at Nesson. There's a lot going on here, which I can tell you about, you know, relatively soon, I hope. But just understand that eventually we're going to get back to a schedule where I can bring this podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. That's always been the plan. But there's a lot going on, and I'm excited about it. But please accept these late interviews. The Helfgott one's a day late. Devin's is later than that. But it's still good stuff. It's entertaining. And I bring that to you right now. Here's Mike Helfgott, followed by Devin Caney. Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, back by popular demand. I had a direct message over the weekend, and then I got another one on Monday and another one Monday night. Hey, when is your draft guy coming back on? Mike Helfgott, of course, the coach at M. Helfgott. How many draft bets you got right now, by the way, you think?
I've got, let's see, it looks like 35 of my own, some of which are duplicates at different sites that I entered twice. So probably about 25 of my own and about 10 on some with some people I'm working with.
And you've learned a little bit more this year about how tough it is to get down. What's your opinion on the process for trying to get down bigger action at some of these different shops? It's a lot tougher than people think, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, if you're just a, you know, normal recreational bettor, make $50, $100 bets, you're not going to have a problem. when you start really trying to make, you know, real money at this, it definitely is a lot more difficult. You might have to look offshore. The offerings are going to be less. The straddles are going to be bigger. The holds are going to be bigger. I don't have to do this for a living.
You texted me, I think it was Friday night, and you said, I just tried to bet a couple $100 on a prop at 7-1. And they gave you how much money again?
What was it, $28?
It's not even worth getting it done. I mean, it is if you're betting, you know, at 6-1, I guess 30 makes 180. But still, it's almost like you're losing money by not getting done more than you want to.
Well, and the thought was that the odds are going to change, so it's not even worth it. Let's just hope closer to the draft we can get down again on the same bet.
I think what I've learned is that I like the intermediary guys more and more every single season. Like, I've avoided 1-5, and I've really made good money 8-25. And this year, you gave us N'Kobe Dean over 30.5. But I've found that it's easier, and I make more money when I focus on a certain aspect of the draft. And it's been those intermediary first round guys that have been way more profitable than anything else.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. I look back, you know, this is the third year I've done this really seriously. The only thing I lost money on the first year was the quarterback thing. That was Tua, Herbert, and Burrow. The Tua and Herbert, basically. We knew Burrow was one. I lost money on that. Last year, that third pick ended up costing me some money because I was a Mac guy. And otherwise, you're right. I've done really well. It's an interesting point you make. And yeah, and this year, a lot of, especially with the group I'm working with, probably our biggest positions are kind of I took a stance that receivers were going to go earlier than they were being mocked. Receivers were going to go earlier. We've got unders on 4 of the 6 receivers that are going to go first round. And are they correlated in a way that could be dangerous to lose all 4? They absolutely are. At the same time, I'm convicted that we're going to see trades that the more teams need receivers than there are available, that it's become the second most valuable position. If you look at the salaries that Tyreek Hill and these other guys this offseason have commanded, teams are going to want to get these guys and get them on these rookie contracts. So for at least the first 3 years, they don't have the headache of, you know, having to worry about paying them $25 billion.
I saw DraftKings was offering a parlay. It cracked me up. They said you could take the following 5 guys to all go in the top 10. It was like, Thibodeau, Neal, Ekwonu, Hutchinson, and Willis, I think. So 5 players. You could have that parlay at -115.
Right.
Or at the same sports book, you could just bet Willis to go top 10 at +100.
Yeah. There's some interesting things going on here.
What's the weirdest thing you've seen so far?
Well, I've been perplexed by the number 2 before – it became, you know, more likely that Walker was going to go when it was still assumed Hutchinson was 1. The number 2 market made no sense to me because this is completely a narrative driven market. The narrative was out there that Thibodeau is not a Dan Campbell kind of guy. He's not a knee biter. I mean, that makes sense, right? Yet Thibodeau, it came out. It was reported. Thibodeau remained the favorite at number 2 for a week after that. And I'm blowing my mind. I finally heard the FanDuel guy on Pat McAfee yesterday admit that they had a huge liability with Thibodeau at 2. So a lot of these odds are also just based on liability too. You can't, everything is not at face value. Everyone always thinks Vegas is so smart, and they are for everything else. Not for this. They don't know any more than we do, but that's why this is so beatable.
And the common narrative is that information trumps all when it comes to draft betting. That's half true. It's not just the information, though. It's the information from the money guys, because the liability is more important than the information. Now, the money guy that gets the right information is the most dangerous guy and has the biggest gun, but information really isn't everything. It's the money behind the information.
Well put.
You've taken us to water now on 4 bets. N'Kobe Dean over 30.5. Great call on Stingley, under 11.5. I saw that prop about 8.5, 9.5. Penning under 16.5. We got a better number on the juice. And then Kenny Pickett to be taken by the Panthers at plus 250. That market is a whole dollar lower. So those are the four that you've helped us with. I have to ask you on a Tuesday morning, I hate to ask you this question, but for anybody that's still looking for a bet, is there anything with a couple days to go that that jumps off the page for you?
Actually, those silly parlays you just mentioned on DraftKings, I was just looking through them before we talked, and there's one I think that's going to hit at plus 180. Penning, McDuffie, Zion Johnson, Daxton Hill, all drafted in the first round. Penning, McDuffie, and Johnson are – I never call anything a lock. Those three are extremely likely – and the fourth guy, Dax Hill, his current over-under is 28.5. I played him under 32.5 a couple weeks ago. So that's, you know, I'm convicted on that. I think all four of these guys are first-rounders. This guy, Dax Hill, he's listed as a safety, but he also played nickel corner or slot corner. Yeah, nickel corner, slot corner for Michigan. That kind of versatility is what NFL defenses are all about now. You're betting him in the first round at plus 180. These other three guys, I'll die on the hill that there's no way these other three guys are not first rounders.
The man does the homework, so you don't have to. Follow on Twitter at mhelfgott. I appreciate your help. Thanks for all your information. And, you know, you've come on now, I think, three times in the last 2.5 months or something like that. I hope it's a profitable draft for you. I'm pretty sure it's going to be profitable for us. And maybe I'll see you on the spaces tonight if you can get away. Thanks again.
Coach, as the kids say, LFGO.
Joining us on Chicken Dinner, I hear she runs the streets in Philly. Eagles live postgame show. You can see her on ESPN, NBC Sports Philly. She now works for the Superbook and also does some work with NLL for lacrosse as well. Devin Caney at Devin_Caney on Twitter. Welcome to the show. Did I get everything on the resume right?
I think you did. It's always a challenge when I come on anyone's show if they get every, because I always joke I have 20 different jobs. So someone can hit at least 5 of them. It's a success.
What do you do? I do everything, basically.
That's become my answer. Like, so what exactly do you do in the sport? I'm like, you literally everything. Like sports betting, yes. Sideline reporting, hit it. Hosting, yes. Post game show. So yeah, it's fun to have a variety of things that I dabble in.
My only regret coming into this interview with you is that I booked you the day the Sixers play, and this podcast will go up tomorrow, so we don't necessarily have to break down Game 3. Sixers lead 2-0 on the Raptors. Game 3 is tonight. I'll tell you what, though. I was a little like put off by that line. I'm thinking, that's disrespectful sort of to the Sixers. I know the Raptors are down 0-2, and it's a must-win game, but doesn't it feel weird to see Philly only -2?
It's so funny you said that, because the second I saw it, I was like, what? I thought it was going to be way bigger than that. So, yeah, I mean, it feels a little disrespectful, but being, you know, a born and raised Philadelphia fan, people love to doubt us, and I think that hasn't changed. Like, maybe people think the Raptors are going to be big mad going into this game. You know, I know it's going to be rowdy up there. I know their fans are pretty embarrassed. I know the team's embarrassed. So, yeah, but, I mean, Superbook has it at 1.5 now. So I was shocked when I saw it.
I know you can't see this podcast, but Devin is actually holding a broom right now over her shoulder. That's how excited she is for a potential sweep.
Absolutely.
I'm pulling up the odds here at the Superbook, and I'll go in order for odds to win the title, okay? Golden State is now the favorite, it looks like, at the Superbook. They're co-favorites with the Phoenix Suns. And, of course, Devin Booker, we don't know how severe the hamstring injury is. So the Suns and Warriors are plus 350. The Bucks are 4-1. The Celtics are 7-1. Heat 8-1. These numbers are sort of all over the place. Grizzlies 14, Nets 14, Sixers 14, and then the Utah Jazz about 25. I could probably stop there, but if I gave you $100 right now, or one of your friends gave you $100 and said, "All right, bet one team to win the title," who would you bet right now on 420?
Before Devin Booker's injury, I would have said Suns, no hesitation. After that, I got to go Warriors.
That team looked so scary the other night, and it's funny how quickly the narrative changes so fast, not only in sports, but in sports betting, because before game one, the books are like, well, we don't know if Steph's ready. And now two games later, we're going to fucking make them the favorite. You know, it changed so quickly. And he was about 14-1 to win the finals MVP 4 days ago. He's like 4 or 5-1 to win the award now. So I think the bookmakers have watched. Clearly the bettors have bet on Golden State and on Curry. But if they play like they played in game one and two against Denver, I mean, it's only going to go down.
Can we just talk about this for a second, though? The whole Denver thing, because here in Philadelphia, obviously it's been Embiid versus the Joker for regular season MVP. That got, like, it's just insane to me that the playoffs aren't taken into consideration when people are voting on NBA MVP. I'm so mad right now. I'm like stuttering over my words. But the way Denver has been playing in this series, especially Jokic himself, like, it's just so mind-boggling to watch and then have people still insist that that guy is the MVP. And for that reason, I have been loving what the Golden State Warriors have been doing to the Denver Nuggets.
It does turn into a weird pretzel, though, when it comes to the NBA MVP, because it's supposed to be an individual award, but Embiid gets knocked because he's on a better team. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Is it the most valuable player, or is it the most valuable player on a bad team now? Because if you flip spaces, if you took Jokic and put him in Philly and put Embiid in Denver, I would imagine the numbers are still very similar. I think what happens with the Jokic voters is that they see how bad Denver would be without him, and then they look at his WAR and his advanced metrics, and it's not about the eye test, it's about the stat test. So it's a weird award now, and to your point, they're getting drilled right now, and they're probably going to get swept in the playoffs.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about making your other teammates better, I mean, Joel Embiid has done that all season long. Look at the adversity he faced with the whole Ben Simmons situation going into this season. I don't think Joel Embiid was ever not a leader on the team, but I think the whole Ben Simmons thing really made him lean into it. And I think he became more engaged with his teammates and in kind of like lifting them up and making them better as well. So I don't know, I think the same can be said for him.
I have to ask about your first bet.
Okay.
When was it? Where was it? Did you win? Did you lose? When was your first bet?
Okay, so I can't confirm that this was like officially my first bet. There might have been one or two before, but it was in like 2021, early 2021, NFL season when they were allowing like 10% fans at football stadiums. And I was at an Eagles Ravens game, and obviously new sports betting content was a thing, but I wasn't working in it at the time. And I was there with one of my guy friends, and he was placing bets on his phone, and he was like, do you want to place one? And yep. I was like, sure. Why not? And I'm pretty sure I just did like $20 on the over, and I won, not that much money, but I was still really excited, and he was embarrassed at how excited I was, even though the Eagles lost, but still hit the over. So yeah, and then ever since then, you know, it's been really cool to see how sports betting content has really kind of exploded over the past few years.
I'm not going to say it changed your life, but it definitely opened up a different side of sports, you know, and your leap into sports betting is a little different than my leap into sports betting. And that's okay. I mean, everybody does it a different way. Well, I was shooting dice and driver's ed at like 15. So it's a little, I'm totally a scumbag, I guess what I'm getting at. But I remember when I was a sophomore in high school, we had a bookie come to our high school because some of the kids in high school owed the bookie like $20,000.
Oh my God.
And the bookie actually came to school and was like, yeah, this 14-year-old owes me 20 grand. And then the school called the cops. It was a whole ordeal. But at an all-boys Catholic high school in the south side of Chicago, we were exposed to it at a very, very young age.
Yeah. Well, so just gambling as a whole has... I've always been a little bit intimidated by it. Like I would go to Vegas and I never even did slots. Like maybe if someone else was playing like roulette, I would jump in and say, actually, fun story. It was like 3 a.m. We were at Caesars. I was a senior in college on spring break with some of my girlfriends, jumped in on a roulette game and they like looked at me and they're like, pick a number and a color. And I'm like 7 red and it hit. And I got no money from it because it wasn't my money, but still I was so excited because I've always been a pretty superstitious person. I've just never considered myself a super lucky person, obviously not in life, but in, you know, like little things like, oh, of course, you know, if I place a bet here, maybe that'll go wrong. Or like, I'll be at the one slot machine that doesn't work or like something would happen. So it had always been pretty intimidating to me. And then when sports betting started emerging, it was, I would hear, you know, my brother, my guy friends, my dad, like very male space, and they'd talk about it. And I'd just sit there like, it sounds like you guys are speaking another language. I have no clue what you're talking about. So then now to look back on that, and now that I work in it and I understand it, and like, it still is a learning curve. Like I think I still have a ways to go to be, you know, a master better, if that's what you want to call it. But yeah, I guess it had always been kind of a foreign land to me that I was a bit intimidated by. So it's fun now to work in it. And I feel like I'm learning every time, I have to create content about sports, and it makes me more invested.
Sure. You brought up the word learning. So since your first sports mm-hmm. bet wasn't all that long ago, we fast forward to today. What have you learned the most about Devin, the sports bettor?
I'm actually pretty good at betting. I'm not going to lie. Like I won the Superbook. So, I was out at the Westgate at the actual sports book for Superbook for March Madness. And we did this whole battle of the bettors thing where we had to obviously fill out brackets, but then do a lot more, you know, in depth with like the first round of games. And I was going up against like Josh Dover, Taylor Mathis, but I was intimidated because I still do feel like a bit of a betting newbie. And I won. I like crushed them. And when I have to make, I mean, you know this, in sports betting content, you're kind of making predictions, obviously looking at stats, looking at trends, looking at the lines. But for the most part, when I make those videos, like I was joking with Jay, actually, who we were just talking about before we started recording this in Vegas, where he's like, what's your strategy? Like, how do you make your picks? I'm like, honestly, like, yes, stats and everything, but like vibes, like a general just feel. Gut feeling. It's a feel. It's a feel. It's such a thing. And I think I have a good grasp of that gut feeling when it comes to bets. And I'm not going to lie, a lot of my bets hit. So, you know, it's fun and I'm excited to see where it goes. I just hope I don't get to a point where I start, you know, like overthinking it, because then that kind of reverses it and you just go down a rabbit hole.
I promise you that will happen eventually. It is part of the game. You're going to go cold. You're not going to be able to pick a winner for a month. It happened to me.
Don't tell
me that. It's going to, Devin, I'm telling you now, it's going to happen. But it's amazing, and I don't do this for a living. I'm not going to act like I do. I know people that bet every single day and bet thousands of dollars. I can't do that. It's too much stress. There's too much going on. But there's going to come a time when finding a winner is very difficult, and I hope that you stick with your gut and don't double and triple guess your gut.
You know, that is something that I should keep in mind, not just for sports betting, but for life. So thank you. I should get that plastered on something and hang it up in my apartment, because when it comes to trusting my gut, I can somehow do it when it comes to sports betting, but not a lot of other things in life.
You'll love this bet. I had a buddy in the Eagles and Patriots Super Bowl who was adamant. He was bang on the table adamant. He said, you know what, Sammy P., Nick Foles is going to score a touchdown.
No way.
And I said, I don't know about that. And he was like, he's going to sneak it in. They're going to get down to the 1 yard line. They're going to do it. He's going to sneak it in. And it didn't really happen that way, but you should have seen this guy running around the bar when it actually happened.
Oh my. Like how though? Like that's following a gut feeling on another level. That's like being psychic to an extent, because I would have never guessed that Nick Foles would score a touchdown, or the way he scored a touchdown, I should say.
He bet $500 on Foles to score a touchdown at, I want to say it was 6-1. So he turned $500 into $3,000. And I'll tell you what, that was a party. Can you imagine? I mean, forget 500 bucks. Imagine having 50 bucks on that.
I cannot imagine. I would have been out of my mind. I mean, I was out of my mind regardless, because I'm an Eagles fan and that was the best night of my life. But still, that would have added just an extra touch of happiness.
How happy were you? Can you define how elated, jubilant you were on that Sunday night, February 2018?
You know, I wish that you could see me right now, because I, as you say that, my face just spread into the biggest smile. And behind me, I have actually a newspaper clipping from the day after. And it says, "At last," and it's Nick Foles holding the Super Bowl trophy. It was just, I think it was happiness, joy, excitement. But I think it was the way it happened, you know, like Carson Wentz had been playing amazing. He went down. It was long overdue. I mean, the city of Philadelphia was overdue for any kind of championship. I honestly never even thought the Eagles would win a Super Bowl in my lifetime, even though we came close when Andy Reid was coach back in the day, but it had been a while. And just being underdogs, facing Belichick and Brady and the Pats, like, even I was really doubtful. I'm like, I'm just going to enjoy myself. I was actually living in Chicago at the time, and I took off the Monday after and flew home to watch with my brother at his place in Philly and like all of our friends. And the second the confetti started falling, I have videos from it, and it actually kind of sounds like people are being murdered, because it's just screams. But like, they're happy screams, but it kind of sounds like people are dying. I think some people were crying, some people were ripping shots, some people were just jumping up and down, some people were standing there in shock. It was just pure joy all around. And then we all went and took to the streets of Philadelphia, and you know, people have their opinions about Philly and their fans. And yeah, some of our fans do crazy things. Yes, people were climbing light poles, but I've also never hugged or high-fived or dapped up more random strangers than I did that night. It was, everyone was just so happy and elated. So hopefully we can do it again, maybe with the NBA championship next.
I remember doing a double take watching the Philly news stations. I believe it was the Sunday morning of that game, and they were showing these crazy Eagle fans. Weren't you guys like Criscoing the street poles or something like that? Or was it the cops were doing it so you wouldn't climb the street poles? I can't remember the specifics, but somebody was putting Crisco all over the streetlights.
Oh, yes. That is a thing that actually happens before many big games in Philadelphia, but especially that one. We say they're greasing the poles again. Because whenever like something big, if maybe it's like a NFC championship, I don't know if they'll do it for like a big Sixers playoff game. But yeah, they grease the poles and people still climb the poles. I guess Philadelphians are just nimble like that.
My last question involves your Eagles. I have a feeling I know how you're going to answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. How much do we love the Eagles over 8.5 wins in 2022?
Oh, God, that's a tough one.
The number's up, too. That number last year was like 6.5, 7. So they're putting respect on the Eagles' name.
They are. It's tough to call now because I want to see what they do in the draft. I've been very underwhelmed with the moves that the Eagles have made this offseason so far. So it's hard for me to say they'll definitely hit that over. Because once again, I mean, going into last season, I had no idea what to expect. And like, I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, we made it to the playoffs. We got crushed in the playoffs, but we still made it. I mean, as a fan, I have to say, yeah, sure, we'll hit that over. Why not?
Yeah, sure, we'll hit that over.
Yeah,
why not?
Why not? Why not?
Well, we'll check back in with you after training camp. Maybe you'll feel a little bit more confident. Hopefully you get a deep Sixers run so you can celebrate that. Please follow Devin on Twitter at Devin_Caney. That's DEVAN_KANEY. She's with the Superbook, Eagles Live Post Game, National Lacrosse League, ESPN, NBC Sports Philly, and a partridge in a pear tree. I appreciate you being flexible. Thanks for coming on the show, and good luck to the Sixers.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. This is great.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to our guests, Mike Helfgott, NFL Draft Guru, and Devin Caney, Superbook Sports, Eagles Live Post Game. Great conversations and great people, and that's what the show is about. You know, you're going to get some information, you're going to get some actionable stuff, but it's also a show about the people that bet and talk about betting sports. Record check, 245, 251, and 8. We're up 8.7 units, and we've got, let's see, the Bucks play, Bucks minus 2.5 games. That's plus 100, and that will be decided tonight. Didn't happen in 4, but it could still happen in 5 to cover the 2.5. Have that result pending, and then the draft bets. One more time, I'll rip through them. Stingley under 11.5, Penning under 16.5, Dean over 30.5, Jordan Davis under 14.5, and Kenny Pickett to be drafted by the Carolina Panthers at plus 250. Coming up on the show, we're going to have two shows this week on the back end of the week. On Friday, it's a long conversation with Adam Chernoff from Covers. We discuss a whole lot about the sports betting space, the industry side, working behind the counter as Adam used to do in the offshore markets, and how he's utilizing his baseball betting to throw off the books. And I'm going to release a bite-sized episode to get you ready for the NHL playoffs with Alex Smith, my favorite hockey handicapper. That's going to be a very separate episode. It's just going to be Alex and I having a conversation to get you ready for the Stanley Cup playoffs. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner.
My brother told me so. You'll be the greatest man alive.